Blog Talk Radio.
Never before has sent so many to battle under the flag in a foreign land.
Never before was there the impressive spectacle of thousands of dead returning to find eternal resting place in the beloved homeland. The incident is without parallel in the history that I know. These dead know nothing of our ceremonies today. They sense nothing of the sentiment or the tenderness which brings their wasted bodies to the homeland for burial, close to kin and friends and cherished associations. These poor bodies are but the clay tenements once possessed of souls which flamed in patriotic devotion, lighted new hopes on the battlegrounds of civilization, and in their sacrifices fed on to accuse autocracy before the court of eternal justice. We are not met for them, nor we love and honor and speak a grateful tribute. It would be futile to speak to those who do not hear, or to sorrow for those who cannot sense it, or to exalt those who cannot know. But we can speak for country, we can reach those who sorrowed and sacrificed through their service, who suffered through their going, who glory with the Republic through their heroic achievement, who rejoice in the civilization their heroism preserves. Every funeral, every memorial, every tribute is for the living, an offering in compensation of sorrow. When the light of life goes out, there's a new radiance in eternity. Somehow the glow of it relieves the darkness which is left behind. Never a death, but somewhere a new life. Never a sacrifice, but somewhere an atonement. Never a service, but somewhere, somehow, an achievement. These have served, which is the supreme inspiration in living. They have earned everlasting gratitude, which is the supreme solace in dying. No one may measure the vast and varied affections and sorrows centering on this priceless cargo of bodies, once living, fighting for and finally dying for the Republic. One's words fail, his understanding is halted, his emotions are stirred beyond control when contemplating these thousands of beloved dead. I find 100,000 sorrows touching my heart. There's ringing in my ears like an admonition eternal, an insistent call. It must not be again. It must not be again. God grant that it will not be. Let a practical people join in cooperation with God to the end that it shall not be. I would not wish a nation for which men are not willing to fight and if need be to die. But I do wish for a nation where it's not necessary to ask that sacrifice. I do not pretend that millennial days have come, but I can believe in the possibility of a nation being so righteous as never to make a war of conquest, and a nation so powerful in righteousness that none will dare invoke her wrath. I wish for us such an America. These heroes were sacrificed in the supreme conflict of all human history. They saw democracy challenged and defended it. They saw civilization threatened and rescued it. They saw America affronted and resented it. They saw our nation's rights imperiled, stamp those rights with a new sanctity and renewed security. We shall not forget, no matter whether they lie amid the sweetness and the bloom of the homeland, or sleep in the soil they crimson, our mindfulness, our gratitude, our reverence shall be in the preserved republic, the maintained liberties, and the supreme justice for which they died.
That was the late Warren G. Harding, who incidentally died at the Sheraton Palace Hotel here in San Francisco. Among the events today, or the burps, those of you who like Heinz ketchup, Henry Heinz was born today in 1844. U.S. Supreme Court Justice during the, the Roosevelt administration. Harlan Fiske Stone was born today. Famous columnists of the, there was two of them, else. Stewart and Joseph Alsop, who had the era of politicians in the White House. Joseph Alsop was born today. Among the interesting deaths, General Kazimierz Pulaski. You don't hear as much about him. He's Polish nobleman who came over to the United States to fight in our Revolutionary War. He died in 1779. One of the explorers of the Northwest Territories, Lewis and Clark Expedition, Meriwether Lewis, died at age 35, really young. Those of you who like the Marx Brothers, Chico Marx died today. And we had Orson Welles, who died at age 70 of a heart attack. He really ballooned out in his early life. I think this is one of my favorites from his film Citizen Kane, and more newspaper people should listen to this and pay attention. I'm sure a lot of people have seen this film, but this is his, what he says is the role of newspapers.
Is that really your idea of how to run a newspaper?
I don't know how to run a newspaper, Mr. Thatcher. I just try everything I can think of.
Todd, you know perfectly well there's not the slightest proof that this armada's off the Jersey
Hello,
coast.
Mr. Bernstein.
Excuse me, Mr.
Can you
Kane.
Prove it isn't?
Is this just
Mr. Bernstein,
in?
I'd like you to meet Mr. Thatcher.
I'll just call
how do you do,
Mr.
Thatcher?
Leland.
Hello.
Mr. Thatcher, my ex-guardian. We have no secrets from our readers, Mr. Bernstein. Mr. Thatcher is one of our most devoted readers. He knows what's wrong with every copy of the Inquirer since I took over. Read the cable.
Girls delightful in Cuba, stop. Could send you prose poems about scenery, but don't feel right spending your money. Stop. There is no war in Cuba. Signed, Wheeler. Any answer?
Yes, dear Wheeler, you provide the prose poems. I'll provide the war.
That's fine, Mr. Kane.
Yes, I rather like myself.
Send it right away.
I came to see you about this campaign of yours. This Inquirer campaign against the public transit company.
Mr. Thatcher, do you know anything we could use against them?
Still the college boy, aren't you?
Oh, no, Mr. Thatcher. I was expelled from college. A lot of colleges. You remember. I remember.
Charles, I think I should remind you of a fact that you seem to have forgotten.
Yes.
That you are yourself one of the largest individual stockholders in the public transit company.
The trouble is you don't realize you're talking to two people. As Charles Foster Kane, who owns 82,364 shares of public transit preferred, you see, I do have a general idea of my holdings. I sympathize with you. Charles Foster Kane is a scoundrel. His paper should be run out of town. A committee should be formed to boycott him. You may, if you can form such a committee, put me down for a contribution of $1,000.
My time's
on the other hand, I am the publisher of the Inquirer. As such, it's my duty, and I'll let you in on a little secret. It's also my pleasure to see to it that decent, hardworking people in this community aren't robbed blind by a pack of money-mad pirates just because they haven't anybody to look after their interests. I'll let you in on another little secret, Mr. Thatcher. I think I'm the man to do it, you see. I have money and property. I don't look after the interests of the underprivileged. Maybe somebody else will. Maybe somebody without any money or property.
Yes, yes,
and that
yes.
Would
money
be too
and property.
Bad.
Well, I happened to see your financial statement today, Charles.
Oh, did you?
Now, tell me honestly, my boy. Don't you think it's rather unwise to continue this philanthropic enterprise? This Inquirer that's costing you $1 million a year?
You're right, Mr. Patrick. I did lose $1 million last year. I expect to lose $1 million this year. I expect to lose $1 million next year. You know, Mr. Thatcher, at the rate of $1 million a year, I'll have to close this place in 60 years.
Yeah, I think that's an important clip, and it says a lot about newspapers, even today. They're more interested in the propagandists who pose as journalists, push their political and sexual agendas. Also on this date, in 1864... getting back to the rights of people, Maryland abolished slavery. In 1890, we had a racist organization start up, the Daughters of the American Revolution. And during the, I think it's first or second administration of FDR, Marian Anderson was invited to sing Constitutional Hall. I think it was Constitutional Hall, and that was controlled by the Daughters of the American Revolution, and they denied her that. So Eleanor Roosevelt arranged for the great black soprano Marian Anderson to, I think, sing at the Lincoln Memorial. Now, Marian Anderson's nephew is the conductor of the Oregon Symphony. He had polio. He studied in Europe. He a lot of blacks who were classical musicians and even singers had to go to Europe because of the racism. Took Marian Anderson at the end of her career by Rudolf Bing, who was an Austrian Jew, or Jewish background, who took over the Metropolitan Opera after Edwin Johnson was Canadian. He invited her to sing in the role of Azucena in Il Trovatore, and it wasn't until Leontine Price came along in the 60s, he also gave her career a boost. and Martina Arroyo. So, and then blacks had to go to Europe. They would sing in Wagnerian operas until one racist director decided he wanted a white Valkyrie or a white Brunhilde. But it was very difficult for blacks to get these roles. Now we have Chinese, Koreans, Japanese, blacks, all over the place. And interesting, the new conductor of the New York Symphony, the New York Philharmonic, the two merged, Elaine Gilbert, his mother is Japanese ethnic, and I guess Gilbert French, if I'm not mistaken. But it's all changing. So we don't have a black who's a conductor of a major American Symphony Orchestra. The only black that conducts an orchestra is the guy who conducts the Oakland Symphony, which is like provincial, but they try. Among the other events today, the J. Edgar Hoover movie's coming out about J. Edgar Hoover, and there's going to be some controversy about the screenwriter, a guy named Dustin Lance Black, who's accused of making homosexual videos that don't use condoms. I mean, he shouldn't be making them anyway, but J. Edgar Hoover, there was some controversy about him. He came into the government at the time of the so-called Red Scare near the end of World War One, when the Attorney General in the Wilson administration decided to go after the communists, primarily Russian Jews who had come here from Russia. And so they were deporting all these people, and Mitchell Palmer was his name, the Attorney General, and J. Edgar Hoover went to work for him and then later took over what was the new FBI Bureau, Federal Bureau of Investigation. In 1922, Hoover appointed the first woman special agent investigator. It was quite a plum at the time, political plum for a woman, because women still didn't get the respect, even though they were nearly half the population. So this is a little known thing about J. Edgar Hoover. And then we had the Chinese Civil War started after the Japanese were defeated in World War II. So, and that was between Chiang Kai-shek of the Nationalists, some of them who came over here or went to Taiwan, and Mao, who eventually won, and they had what is known as Red China. And we'll get into, are we getting pumpkin pie from China? So there'll be something on the web on our American Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas. And so, if you're concerned about what's going into your food after the pet foods scare, the melamine, things like that, that the Chinese were putting into these products, you better, we'll tell you what to look out for in this pumpkin pie. I don't want to scare anybody. And then, of course, the Raising Cain, the black, was even with Romney in the Republican presidential preference polls of this state. Anita Hill, the black woman lawyer from University of Oklahoma and went to Yale Law School, she testified that Clarence Thomas, the U.S. Supreme Court Associate Justice, had sexually harassed her. Yet she never explained why these claims of harassment, before she testified before Congress, why she, when she was coming to Washington, D.C., she would call up Clarence Thomas and say, let's go to lunch. If he sexually harassed her, why was she calling him up to go to lunch? So there's a disconnect here, a big disconnect. And, of course, I understand her students at the University of Oklahoma Law School don't like her and think she's flaky, and there are a lot of other allegations, which we won't get into right now. And then this is interesting. Whenever you see the coronation of the British monarch, the last one was Elizabeth the second in 1952. In the monarch's coronation oath, they recite or pledge "Defender of the Faith." Now that term was granted by Pope Leo X back in the early reign of Henry VIII in the 15th century, and that was given to Henry VIII because he had written a treatise castigating Luther and his Protestantism. Then 13 years later, after Henry VIII couldn't get a divorce from Catherine of Aragon because she couldn't give him a live son, he set himself up as the Church of England, the head of the Church of England, what is known as the Anglican faith in England, Episcopal here in the United States, and He left the Catholic Church. He refused to acknowledge the authority of the Pope over the Catholic Church in England. So the title was really stripped from him, as he was no longer a defender of the Roman Catholic faith. So that's where that comes from. Among the interesting things, now we're hearing about the Penn State scandal and the rape of these young boys. I don't know if any students, college students, were raped. However, there was a case involving one of the DuPont family who liked wrestlers, and he murdered one and apparently tried to lure them into unwanted sexual activity. And I guess this DuPont is in an insane asylum. We'll get into more of that. However, if the thinking here in California is if it had happened in San Francisco, it would have been covered up. And this is what happened in the San Francisco Unified School District, because I was a lecturer there and a producer, that children were raped, lesbians raped a young girl in the showers. That's an allegation, strong allegation. And then some boys were sodomized. And these bogus groups were coming in the classrooms and teaching kids as young as kindergarten about gay, lesbian sex and transgenderism. Anyway, we'll get into that money. We hope we have our new equipment hooked up. And so we'll end with our theme for the week, politics and poker. I don't know if any of these guys are playing strip poker, but maybe they should sit down and play poker, and it wouldn't be so they wouldn't be so hostile.
Finished. Now.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We got to pick a candidate for Congress this year.
And pick more than a candidate. Anyway, we'll also get into how military veterans in California have been abused. So we're going to close out, and we'll be back Monday at 4 o'clock. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Have a good weekend, and this will stay up in the archives. And you can download it on